Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Tuesday, July 28th, welcome, 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 friends, on Into the Program. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolf-Manarit.
So, Avi, when I was a kid, my brother and I would sit in front of the television arguing over who could run that hamster wheel fast enough or who could pick a flag out of a big old nose.
Mm-hmm.
And if an image immediately came in your head, you're probably of a certain age, as I am, and was a big fan of Double Dare. Okay. And for a whole generation of people who grew up in the late 80s, early 90s, Double Dare was one of the coolest things on television. And what a lot of people may not realize, and this is something that I didn't even realize, was all of that magic was made right here in Philadelphia, but not just in Philly, but right here at WHYY. I had no idea.
Hallowed ground.
I know. And so today we're taking a trip back with two of the people who made it happen. Original host Mark Summers and the unmistakable voice of Double Dare, his sidekick, Harvey. So, and we would love to hear from you, our listeners. What questions do you have for the stars of Double Dare? And if you have standout memories from the show, you can share that as well. And also, we'd love to hear about your favorite nostalgic kids TV show. So you can share that with us as well. The number to call is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, hello, you can share those memories and nostalgic TV shows in the chat. Did you watch the show, Avi?
Didn't have cable.
Yeah.
So no. It wasn't. So the answer is no.
Yeah, no.
I've watched it now to prepare for the show. Mm-hmm. So we didn't have cable initially, and then when we got cable, there was a lot of restrictions on what we could watch. I'm also a little too young for Double Dare, at least the first run. Then they had kind of like
the
revivals
run,
and stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm definitely aware of it. And like the thing that I thought of first was the slime. The slime kind of transcended the show.
The slime, because you could buy it. There was like toys and stuff you could buy.
And then they had
like
the Nickelodeon, remember the awards?
Oh,
and they had like slime people there. So the slime kind of lived on. That kind of lived on into my childhood.
Yeah. And I mean, the thing is, it was like, it was cool. And then the families got involved. I mean, the show really, really blew up. And it blew up Nickelodeon.
Nickelodeon
like, became the spot, the place for kids.
Absolutely. So, it's 40 years old. Can you believe that?
Don't tell me. Don't tell, like,
I'm just stating the chronological facts here. It's been 40 years.
Oh, my God.
Since the debut of Double Dare. From these grounds right here at WHYY.
I don't even know what to say.
Yeah.
I don't even know what to say. But share your memories. I'm sure you have some. 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. 40 years.
Well, here's something that'll make you feel better. The top grossing movie 40 years ago in 1986 was Top Gun. And it's basically still the top grossing movie now. So, you know, it doesn't feel that long ago.
Dang. Top Gun.
Top Gun's 40 years old as well.
Who knew?
I knew.
Yeah. You know, of course you did. He's the king of trivia.
No, I looked it up. I remember saying I knew because
so
I looked it up.
Good.
No, I didn't know that off the top of my head.
You looked it up. But you would have been so good on Double Dare.
Yeah, I would have never gotten to the physical challenge.
You
would have just nailed the trivia.
Yeah.
Actually, I was watching some old clips and there was a lot of questions I didn't know.
Ooh. Probably done on purpose. Yeah. So anyway, trio of local news stories.
Anyways, trio of local news stories. So back in March, if you weren't following, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court ruled that the Commonwealth sentencing rules for second-degree murder are unconstitutional. And the court told the Pennsylvania legislature to fix those rules. They set a deadline. And now the latest news is that the legislature has missed that deadline, meaning there's sort of not any clarity about what the rules are for sentencing around second-degree murder in Pennsylvania. So under the old rules, anyone convicted of second-degree murder in PA had to be given life in prison without the possibility of parole. That's what the Supreme Court said was unconstitutional. But the state needs new sentencing guidelines written by the legislature, and the legislature cannot agree on what those guidelines should be. According to Spotlight PA, there's a Senate bill that would create a mandatory minimum of 35 years with some narrow exceptions. There's a House bill with no mandatory minimum sentences for second-degree murder. And between the two, they cannot figure out what the new rules should be. So now we're in this limbo state where folks who are being sentenced for second-degree murder, their cases will sort of be up to the discretion of individual courts. And for people who are already in prison, who were sentenced under the old guidelines, they may have to file individual appeals because the Supreme Court did not make its initial ruling retroactive. So overall, pretty confusing situation and a stalemate in Harrisburg.
Yeah, and this is one of the issues I covered. And I could tell you that there's still a chance. I've been told that there's still a chance the House or the Senate bill could be considered by the opposing party body before the end of the year. But at the same time, because they reached a stalemate, it's probably unlikely. And so there's this free fall. And, you know, the court has said that, you know, it is cruel and unusual punishment to sentence somebody for mandatory life without parole if they didn't take a life. And what the current law does is treat people who participated and helped with a murder the same as someone who was just a getaway driver.
Right.
And that is kind of inherently unfair. And so the court was trying to give the legislators 120 days to do their job, but they were not able to do it. And so we don't know what the sentencing is going to look like. It could be uneven based on the county you're in. So for the victims' families, they're going to have to deal with this piecemeal, as will the 1,100 people who are currently serving the mandatory life without parole for second-degree murder. So there you go. Story number two. A battle over a Montgomery County data center has gotten a bit tense, and now a group of township officials, they are crying foul. The proposed AI data center would take over 10 existing buildings at the closed 6-acre Cleveland Cliffs steel mill near the Schuylkill River in Conshohocken. The 2 million square foot facility would be located about a mile from the borough's downtown. And it's gotten a lot of pushback from residents who say, you know, it'll harm the environment, jack up energy bills. We've heard the argument. And so the Plymouth Township Council, they passed the zoning ordinance to deal with the concerns. In response, the developer, Brian O'Neill, filed a lawsuit challenging the validity of the ordinance. And he claims that the facility would bring tens of millions of dollars to the borough. He also said that he was negotiating with the council and had planned to, you know, basically deal with majority of their concerns. But the council members say, look, he was intimidating them. He was bullying them, trying to force them to move forward with this data center. And so he says that that is a bold-faced lie, and it's gotten really tense. And this is sort of indicative of debates and challenges over data centers that are happening across Pennsylvania, across New Jersey, across Delaware. And this is fast becoming a political issue as well. We have a Democrat, Paige Cognetti, mayor of Scranton. She's challenging Republican Rob Bresnahan in the 8th congressional district race. She made this the subject of an attack ad saying, "We are not for sale." So you have, you know, Democrats, you have Republicans, everybody sort of push pulling over these AI data centers. And now this one is getting pretty nasty in Conshohocken.
Yeah. And that race, by the way, that you mentioned, the congressional race, is not where this other data center is. That's this Plymouth Township. That race is up in northeastern Pennsylvania. But like you said, it shows just how much motion this issue has on the ground. There's a lot of grassroots opposition all over the place to these data centers. And I am waiting for the moment where that translates into a national political issue. Maybe it never will, but it feels like the potential is there for this to become a national political issue. Maybe there'll even be a partisan divide over it. We'll see. But that race up in northeastern Pennsylvania seems to be a test case for that possibility.
Yeah. And what's interesting is this O'Neill developer owns the land. And it's hard to say you can't tell someone what to do with the land that they own. And so there's going to be a lot of push pull over this. And like you said, we'll see what the laws look like.
Moving on to our third story now. One of South Jersey's most famous shore towns is about to be in the television spotlight. Deadline reported this week that FX has won the rights to the latest project by Lisa McGee, who was the woman behind the smash hit comedy Dairy Girls.
Oh, yeah.
And this new show by McGee is called Wildwood, set in, you guessed it, Wildwood, New Jersey. Like Dairy Girls, it's a comedy. It reportedly follows a group of teen girls from Ireland who arrive in Wildwood in the year 2000 with, quote, no money, no visas, no plans, no clue.
Love it.
Do you like the potential here? You think Wildwood is a good setting for a comedy?
You know what? It just took me back to Jersey Shore. Remember, you know, that show? And and if, you can't go wrong. You can't go wrong with a shore town.
You think it's going to have a Jersey Shore vibe?
If it's going to be a comedy and you got a bunch of girls coming from overseas, I mean, and they're dealing with New Jersey folks, there has to be humor in that.
I think there's a lot of potential here.
Mm-hmm.
I think Wildwood is, it's an evocative name, which is a good name, which makes it a good name for a show.
It has a nostalgic appeal to it.
Yeah.
And
I feel like a show called, no offense, but a show called like Stone Harbor would feel like more like sad. Wildwood feels like it could be funny.
No, it does. And like Wildwood, it depends on how you go. Wildwood. Like either way, no matter how you say it.
I guess so.
No matter how you
I am hoping
it can be funny.
I am hoping this new show on FX draws some visual, spiritual influence from a documentary called Wildwood, New Jersey that was based on like the interior lives of young women in Wildwood in like a summer in the mid 1990s. It's a cult classic, great documentary, and it's like 5 years off from the setting of this show on FX. So maybe there'll be a little, you know, some parallels there. I'm just looking for it. That's all.
Look at you tying it all in a bow. And coming up, we're going to take a walk down memory lane.
More nostalgia.
Yeah. Double Dare, the host Mark Summers, sidekick Harvey here in studio. We get to reminisce. Email your memories or your questions to the host, studio2@whyy.org. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
Welcome back to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. If you grew up in the late 80s and early 90s, you might remember a classic Nickelodeon show called Double Dare. The children's competition program was a mix of trivia, physical challenges, and of course, the green slime.
But did you know? The show was filmed in Philadelphia right here at WHYY. And the show is celebrating its 40th anniversary this year. Yes, it has been 4 decades since the trivia questions, the physical challenges, and of course, the vaunted obstacle course.
Good luck to you, Colleen. On your mark, get set, go! Get in there and dive on down. Okay, we are going to jump up and grab that over to the Blue Plate Special. And you wait for the flag on your way over there. It is. It's time to go through Dallas here. You wait on the other side. Don't worry about sticking that flag down there. The main thing is to move on. Roy Chocolate is flying everywhere. Obstacle number 4 coming up.
Oh, the memories, the memories. So today we're going to be taking a look back at the classic kids television program with the people who made it a Philly staple. Joining us in studio is none other than the one and only Mark Summers. Mark, welcome back to Studio 2.
Thank you. We actually shot this show originally in WHYY's humble beginnings, and we had more fun here. We were here, 3 years or something, maybe? Yeah. Something like that, yeah.
Awesome. Sounds about right.
Well, welcome
and
back.
And that second voice you heard right there is Philly radio personality John Harvey, who became the announcer for Double Dare. Harvey, welcome back, we should say, to WHYY.
Thank you. I'm just sorry that, Avi, you were not old enough to remember our prime time, and you were still a fetus back when we were showbiz legends, but, you know.
Hey, how old are you, Avi?
I am 38. Someone's ever asked me that on air before. I'm 38. So I was negative two when the show debuted.
Yeah.
But we've established that Cherry is old enough to remember
the show. I do remember the show. And he reminded me it was 40 years ago. Yes, I remember. My brother and I watched the show.
Does it feel like 40 years, guys?
No.
Maybe we should start there.
No, not at all.
Not at all.
It's flown by. You know, everything flies by. As you get older, it flies by even quicker. But the fact that when you think October 6, 1986 is when we launched.
Wow.
And here we are. A little older, hair a lot grayer, those of us who have hair. And it's just phenomenal, you know, just crazy. And when you walk in here, there's memories, and yet everything that once was is gone.
It's so different.
It looks totally different.
And by the way, I want to remind our listeners, we'd love to hear from you. What questions do you have for the stars of Double Dare? And if you have a favorite memory from the show, you can share that as well. You can also shout out your favorite nostalgic kids TV show. The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, you can drop a comment in the live chat.
And Dexter on Facebook says, when it comes to nostalgic TV shows, where do I start? Double Dare, Legends of the Hidden Temple, Guts. Let me clear the rest of my day. I need to go back and watch some TV. Nothing today.
Nickelodeon owned the kids market back in the day.
Absolutely.
And when I grew up in Indianapolis, every station had 2 or 3 kids shows.
Yep.
And now there's no television program, especially for kids, in the areas that we generally think of, but certainly on YouTube and, you know, 14 other streaming channels, you can find stuff. But nothing like us. There are no people that kids can identify with, like Mike O'Malley, who did Guts, and myself and Harvey and various other things that Nickelodeon did. Everything's animation now.
Yeah. Well, but also you mentioned, right, so you, the tradition to pre-Nickelodeon would have been like here in Philly, there was Sally Star and there was
Adults.
Captain Noah.
Yeah.
And there was these locally produced shows. But you guys were, you're a national concept. So that's, in some ways, you're creating and defining this new market for television programming for kids, right?
Well, and at the time, there wasn't a game show just for kids. That was the sort of the germ of the brilliant part of the idea is kids don't have a game show of their own. Kids watch game shows. Yep. They like, when I was sick and home from school, I would, you know, I'd watch game shows and Truth or Consequences or whatever, Bob Barker and all that stuff. And so, you know, I don't know if it was Jerry Laybourne, the president of the network, who initiated or heard that first germ of an idea, but somebody there in the creative team said, well, maybe we make a game show just for kids, let kids play, and that was the start of it.
They found out that kids were living vicariously through their parents watching Price and Wheel and stuff like that, and they said, well, let's give kids their own show, and that's how it happened. There was a thing going on playgrounds back in the day called Truth or Dare, and so they took the concept of that, added some mess, some slime,
and the rest is history. So tell us how you got involved, Mark, with the show. I'd love to hear your, you know, how you got pulled into this show, because you didn't know. I mean, they had to pitch it to you, kind of like you're trying out for this show, you're auditioning,
right?
But then,
well,
like,
here's what happened.
Yeah, tell me the story.
I started off as a professional magician. That was my career.
Okay.
And then I became a regular at the Comedy Store around 1976. And I was basically doing warm-ups on television shows. So when the people would come in, I would try to make them laugh and get them energized.
So the people in the audience.
Right.
Yeah.
So
this
would
be like the live audience for a sitcom. Get them jazzed up.
I did Soap and Star Search and Alice and What's Happening Now. And I worked 6 days a week doing warm-ups. And a friend of mine, Dave Garrison, was a ventriloquist from Indianapolis, had moved to L.A. and got the initial phone call. They had already auditioned 1,000 people in New York, didn't like anybody.
1,000 people.
And he came to L.A. and they called Dave Garrison and they said, we heard you're a ventriloquist. Would you be interested in auditioning for the show we called Double Dare? And he said no. And he called me and said, there's this network I've never heard of called Nickelodeon. They're looking for a game show host. Why don't you go instead of me? So I went, and they said, Dave Garrison? And I said, Dave couldn't make it. My name is Mark. Can I audition? They went, yeah, sure. So I went in an audition.
What?
Yes. I wasn't even called initially. And I went in an audition, and I got 3 callbacks. Okay? They liked me so much, they kept bringing me back. And one thing I did when I go to an audition, I was always getting the name and the phone number of the casting director and the producers and the directors. Whosever phone number I could get, I got.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew they were going to start shooting in Philadelphia the end of September for a launch in October. And I called them and I said, what's going on? I haven't heard from you guys. And they said, funny you called. We have it narrowed down to you and one other guy. And I said, well, how are you going to decide?
I'm here. Call me.
Yeah, let's do it. And he said, well, when we did the auditions, grown-ups played the part of kids. And so they said, we don't know if you're any good with kids. And I said, well, I have kids. They said, yeah, that doesn't mean anything. I used to do magic shows for kids. Yeah, we don't care. So I said, I came up with the concept. I said, I don't know who this other guy is, but why don't you fly both of us to New York and put us in a room, a stage, with real live kids and let us play the game and let the best person win. He said, I'll call you right back. Call me back an hour later and said, what are you doing over Labor Day? And I said, I guess I'm coming to New York and playing Double Dare with kids. He said, yes. So they flew me. And I played the game with kids, and then they threw me out of the studio, and they brought in whoever this other person was, and he played the game with kids. And 2 days later, I got a phone call, and they said, congratulations, you are the host of Double Dare. And I said, well, how many people did you audition in L.A.? And he said, about 1,000. So I said, 1,000 in New York, 1,000 in L.A. Why did I get the job?
Yeah.
And he said, well, honest, you and the other guy were about the same. But at the end of his audition, he looked at the camera and said, are we done, or do you want me to do something else? And I looked in the camera and I said, we'll be back with more Double Dare right after this. And because I threw it to commercial,
I stayed in host mode.
Yeah, I did. And that turned my life, changed my life.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I love that. And Harvey, you were on radio here in Philly.
Yeah, I had just been fired from my first morning show. I was at IOQ for about 14 years almost. And it was a very high-profile firing, and you know, everyone, including myself, was quite upset about it.
Yeah.
And so it was in the works, and had happened maybe only a month and a half, 2 months earlier. So then they get the word that there's this show that Nickelodeon out of New York is going to come here and shoot it in Philadelphia. They needed an announcer. And so one of the production assistants on the show was a fan of my morning show. She contacted me and said, why don't you audition there? Here's this game show coming into town. And so I did a quick audition, gave a cassette to them, and they called me and they said, okay, you got the job. And I was initially hired just as the off-camera, unseen, right. Tell them what they've won, and, you know, it's a case of Gatorade or whatever it would be, you know.
Yeah.
I took a case of Gatorade.
Or a cool phone or, like, right. You know.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
This computer that is about as fast, yes, as
the electronic prizes are hilarious. They are. To go back and watch.
Oh, my God.
So I saw one the other day. It was a little, it was like a, one of the prizes was a little, it looked like almost like a pocket organizer, but it was, all it was the Merriam-Webster Dictionary.
Yeah,
but
no,
it was a whole blocky thing just to look up words. Now I can do that
analog
on my phone alongside a thousand other
tasks.
You
don't have to look it up. You can ask it and it'll tell you.
Exactly.
You know?
Right. So I was the unseen guy, but yeah. they knew about my background. And toward the end of the first season, we shot 65 first season here. And toward the end of that and at the beginning of the next season, they would throw me a bone every once in a while. Yeah. Here, you can do this little tiny bit, you know. And then they saw that I sort of knew what I was doing and I'd had experience. And so then they began, by the second season, they'd worked me in as the second banana goofy guy. Mm. And then they said, we want to do some stunts with you. And I said, okay, here's the deal. I said, I'm very easy to work with, but I only have one really hard and fast rule. I'll get as messy as you want. You can throw as much crap on me as you want, but it gets in the show. It's not just so the stage crew can laugh.
No, you want it on camera.
If it's on the show, have at it. I'll do
a good line.
I'll do whatever you want.
That's actually a great line. And that's how you got, you became like a crew. And Robin, too,
our assistant, who became a personality because she was so darn funny and still is. But it's so weird to think of us. Robin was maybe, 22?
22, maybe.
Yeah, so now she's 62. That doesn't make
any
sense at all.
Just out of college.
Yeah.
Goodness.
And Harvey and I are going to be 75 years old, which is so bizarre to think about when you're 34 or 35 starting this thing off, and then all of a sudden, you know, here you are. That it just... It flies by.
This is the part where you two chime in and go, oh, you don't
but you
look that
great.
Old.
You
yeah,
look,
that's right.
No.
You look like $1 million.
You look great.
I would have never guessed.
I have to read some of these great comments.
You have to.
So LOLOIL on YouTube says, I watched Double Dare on cable as a kid in the Philippines.
Wow.
It's one of the things that sparked my interest to live in the U.S.
No kidding.
And now I actually live in the show's birthplace. Who would have thought?
Mm. Wow.
Better Integra actually has a question for us.
Yes.
On YouTube says, why are all kids' shows today's cartoons and animated? My favorite early teen shows were Double Dare, Legends of the Hidden Temple, Hey Dude, Salute Your Shorts, Kenan and Kel, and Saved by the Bell. So Better Integra, and I know like we're not doing TV history here, but do you guys have a sense of why those live action shows have sort of been phased out?
Yeah. Really stupid executives. Yeah, I don't think there's
anybody. Is it a money thing? I don't know.
It may be a money thing, but they don't relate. You know, because a show like SpongeBob has had such success, everybody's looking for the next SpongeBob. Yeah. And I don't know when the last live-action kids game showy kind of thing even existed. Nickelodeon obviously did it, but I bet it's been 20 years since something like that has gone on.
Yeah.
And I thought if somebody would do a station like Nick back in the day and do shows based for kids that were game and sloppy, I think they would kick you know what, but nobody's thinking of doing it.
And I think about like what, like watching the show and like imagining being there, you know, like, you know, kids really wanted to be in person.
Yes.
It was very physical. You were touching grass, so to speak, something that people don't do as often now.
Yeah. Yes.
And I want to take you guys back to that because it sort of ramped up. I was looking at the show early and it sort of ramped up with the physical challenges, ramped up with the obstacle course. And you guys tricked it out over time.
Oh, yeah.
But like, so talk about that progression. Like, how did you sort of start? It started kind of small. And then it kind of like blew up and became super fancy, super tricked
out. Super sloppy, Double Dare. And we did Celebrity Double Dare. We kicked off the Fox Network on Saturday nights at 8 o'clock. We were the first show on there. We did that for a while as well. So I just think that the competition, all of a sudden, there were a bunch of ripoff shows.
And just so people who didn't watch the show, just tell them how the
you would have
worked.
To ask a question, and if you didn't know the answer, you could take a physical challenge. And if you took the physical challenge and got it, you'd get more points. If not, the other team would get it.
Yep.
And at the end of the show, whoever had the most points ran an obstacle course. And what this was 8 obstacles in 60 seconds that were filled with slime and whipped cream and mustard and any substance you can imagine. And they would get totally slopped up. But the kids, Harvey and I have had this conversation several times. The kids didn't care about the prizes. They just wanted to get messy and have fun. And after we did the first 65, focus group said, we love the show, but we want to get the host messy. Because I was perfectly neat and clean after the first 65. So all of a sudden, getting me slimed or full of whipped cream or any substance that was on the course that day became part of the show. And we did it here at HYY. Then we did it in New York for a bunch. And then we came back here. And then Universal Studios in Orlando opened up a Nickelodeon area. Yeah. And we would do it live down there for a couple of years. And, I mean, the audience had about 500-600 people. And we'd turn that audience around 3-4 times a day.
And here's a little secret about, I mean, Mark has a much bigger background in game shows than I do, but I was a fan of game shows my whole life, and I loved game shows. And here's the secret of a successful game show. This guarantees that it's well-written and well-structured. If you can pull off a come-from-behind victory very late in the game, if there's a possibility that you can come from the back and still win, then that's a game show with legs on it. And the best game shows hold out that possibility. And that was the great thing about Double Dare, was because of how fast it moved. And, in the second round, when the dollar values were doubled, if you got a physical challenge, now you're like up 60 points, or I think it was 60. And so you could come from behind and you could win it at the last second.
It's the hope that keeps you.
There were a few blowouts, and those are not as good television, of course. But most of the time, there was the possibility that maybe one team or the other could win. And when the kids got the chance to run through the obstacle course, they just wanted to be in that thing and roll around in the goo.
I want to ask about that part, because I do feel like there is something timeless about Double Dare. And the other show actually made me think of was American Bandstand, which is also started here in Philadelphia.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm.
There is something magic happens when kids get to just see other kids on camera.
I agree.
Being kids.
Yep.
Yeah.
Expressing themselves.
So
you know
you
what I mean?
Compare it to Bandstand. That's the show.
When I saw the way the kids reacted in the audience to watching the kids go through the obstacle course and get messy and cheering them on, it reminded me of the frenzy in like a Bandstand audience. Just getting to see each other just be themselves on camera.
Mm-hmm. And they were.
And it's not like when you watch a sitcom and you watch a child be given a scripted role.
Right.
That's a totally different thing.
And I've thought about this show a lot. And so real quick, armchair psychology. Why did the show work?
Exactly.
One, we gave kids agency.
Exactly.
They were in charge of their own destiny. They won or lost the game based on their performance, not anything else. And so we empowered them in that here's your 21, 22 minutes, whatever, you get to be in charge of your destiny for a half an hour. And the other thing was that we gave them the view of being themselves.
Yeah.
And we also gave them permission to do what every grown-up tells them not to do.
Get messy.
Get messy.
Right.
Yeah.
Every adult who acts like an adult has kids don't do that. And we said, come here and do that like crazy.
Yeah.
And that was irresistible lure. And when I first got on the show, I was a little concerned about, is this going to make it look like we're taking advantage of kids, encouraging them to be materialistic and wanting money and prizes and things? And within the first 15, 20 shows, I went, they don't give a crap about the prizes.
That's right.
They just want to be on the show and get in the goo. And I felt so great about it after that. Everybody just wanted to play.
I love that. And Mark, I'd love to get your take on when you knew. Because I was looking up, the ratings would just double and triple within days. You started one way on Monday. By Thursday was something else. By the next month, it was like out of this world.
Well, that was back in the day, UHF TV was the big thing, and Facts of Life and Different Strokes were the number one shows, and all of a sudden their ratings dropped and they couldn't find out where they went. Well, they were coming to Double Dare and Nickelodeon, which was fantastic. And so the word of mouth on playgrounds is what that's what it was. They called it playground
blew
talk.
It up. Yeah.
And they'd say, hey, we saw somebody jump into 5,000 pounds of baked beans today. Well, where was that? On Nickelodeon. What? And you could win a trip to space camp? What's that? And so that's how
space camp was the jam.
So that's what happened. And then celebrities started to do it. We did Gorilla Monsoon against Bobby the Brain Heenan when we did a whole WWE thing. And we had Weird Al Yankovic on.
We had kid stars on, too.
Yeah, from sitcoms back in the day.
I read there was an NBA All-Star version.
Yeah.
sense of Double Dare.
Done in Orlando. That. That was so much fun. And because the game was being played in Orlando that year, so they all came on and did it.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And so it blew up.
It did.
It seems like it was almost, was it really overnight?
Pretty much. It really was overnight. And 86 to 94 is when we shot it. And, you know, it just... You couldn't predict that, and the fact that if you sat down and said, I'm going to do a hit kids game show, you can't do that. It just was right time, right place, 5:30 in the afternoon, whatever those numbers were. They liked Harvey, they liked me, they loved to see the kids. And then we toured it. Harvey and I went around the country doing 20,000-seat arenas, selling out to kids, moms, 20,000-seaters. Yeah, all over the country.
And another thing we stole from the people that came before is Mark and I, big Rocky and Bullwinkle fans,
yes.
Right? And if you watch Rocky and Bullwinkle, there's always a couple of jokes in there that the kids never get. I always remember they named a character in Rocky and Bullwinkle. He was a lawyer, and his name was Gerrymander. Okay? It's like, there's no kid who's going to get that joke, but Mark and I would talk to each other like we were talking to you guys right now, and the kids, they could sense that. They're not talking down to me. They're talking to me like I'm a peer.
Very true.
And we would throw in an occasional reference or joke for the parents who are watching.
And the moms would say to me, I watch every day for that one time you do something for us.
Aww.
Yeah. I have to read some of these comments because they're wonderful.
Coming in,
and by the way, we've been asking you this hour if you have questions for the stars of Double Dare, or just favorite memories from the show, or even just tell us your favorite, you know, old school kids show. Lisa says, I was on Double Dare in 1987.
Oh my.
I was in eighth grade. My team was the Devastators, and we played against the Fizzers. My partner Damon and I, shout out to him, he's a professor at Penn now.
Amazing.
We won, of course.
Amazing.
My family didn't have cable, so when the episode aired, we had to go across the street to watch at my friend's house. My father got a speeding ticket on the way home to watch me because he wanted to make sure he made it in time.
Oh, go Dad.
And there was no such thing as watching it, you know, back later.
Right.
I do have a VHS tape of my episode from time to time. I can find it on YouTube. I still have nightmares when Mark Summers is yelling, grab the flag, grab the flag. And I don't get it in time for the CD player prize. It's been a really funny memory that I love, and it makes for a great two truths and a lie.
Tell her to take that videotape and digitize it as soon as possible, because that videotape ain't going to last forever.
And by the way, fun fact here, apparently people over the years call WHYY and ask for old tapes of their episode.
Really?
And we don't have them.
Of course, no.
So we just letting y'all know, don't inundate the members, services line, okay? Because we don't have those
old
videos. But Mark, I got to shout you out because you became like a play-by-play announcer.
It's like a sporting event.
Because you were just talking so fast, jumping the flag, getting the goop, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. I mean, how did that develop? Because it didn't start that way.
No. I'll tell you a story. We audition and we do physical challenges. I get the job. So I come here to WHYY for first shoot day, and I see these slides with whipped cream on them and various things with goo. And I said, what's that? And they said, well, that's the obstacle course. I said, nobody told me about it. What's the obstacle course?
Oh, so you didn't know.
I didn't even know.
You didn't know.
And they said, well, whoever wins have to go through those 8 obstacles in 60 seconds to win a big prize. Well, my head was exploding. It's like, wow, somebody should have told me about that.
Okay.
And so the first day
Probably glad they didn't.
Oh, yeah. And the first day we did it, I had to kind of mentally figure out, what the heck do I do? And I looked at it as a sporting event. I grew up, you know, loving baseball and basketball and listening to those guys. And I always talked fast. And it just kind of, I made it up as I went along.
Yeah, wasn't part of the format or anything. He came up with that. And it's in part because you would, what do you feel, stupid, silly? If you're just standing there watching them, you've got to do something.
Yeah.
So he became so enmeshed with their success, was his success. He got it more excited than the kids did. All of a sudden, it was a team of three of them going through the obstacle course. Two kids and Mark.
If everyone buys in, it works.
Yes, and I would get yelled at sometimes because I wanted the kids to win all the time.
Right.
And some kids would be slipping down the Sunday slide, and I'd be pushing them up because I wanted them to win.
Go.
Yeah.
So we're about to go to a break. We're talking with Mark Summers and John Harvey about Double Dare, which is turning 40 years old. If you can believe it, keep those calls and comments coming. 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org, and you're listening to WHYY, home of Double Dare. And welcome back, listeners and contestants, to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. And if you are just joining us, we're taking a trip down a green slime memory lane. Nickelodeon's Double Dare is celebrating its 40th
anniversary. The show has a unique tie to Philly. It was filmed right here at the studios at WHYY.
And we are taking this journey with the two men at the center of the Classic Kids program, Mark Summers and John Harvey, who are in studio with us.
Yes, and we have a question for you, our listeners. What questions do you have for the stars of Double Dare? If you have a unique memory you'd like to share about the show, also you can shout out your favorite nostalgic kids TV shows at 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube, you could drop your comments and memories in the live chat. We have Robert from Woodbine on the line. Robert, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment? Robert?
Robert took the physical challenge.
I think we lost Robert. Yeah. Well, we have Luann from Glenside on the line. Luann, oops. Luann, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment? We lost both of our callers.
Can we get Alexander Graham Bell on the line?
By the way, Nikki on Facebook says, I love the Double Dare obstacle course. The one where you search for the flag in the laundry prepared me for adulting. Oh, and I hated those nose-picking green boogies challenges.
Speaking of green, we got to talk about slime. So this is the this became like the icon that outlived the show in many ways. The green slime. Yeah. So first of all, just Mark, straight up, what was in the green slime?
Well, first of all, everybody says we created it. We did not.
You borrowed it,
No, it's don't. What was the show that it started on? You can't do that
you
on
can't
television.
Can't do that on television.
It started with the slime thing. The insurance company said that the kids, if it got in their mouth, had to be edible. So the base was vanilla pudding, applesauce, and green food coloring, and a little bit of oatmeal. And
that sounds great, actually.
That's what it was.
Was it delicious?
Day three, maybe, but as the time moved on, not quite as much. I did a new version of it a couple of years ago, and they have this very scientific slime now, where my job as exec producer was to go in and figure out what viscosity we wanted. Mm. Did we want it drippy? Did we want it thick? And it's not as tasty as it once was when we were doing it.
Why do you think the slime caught on the way it did?
You get, as a kid, in trouble when you get messy. You know, go to your room. You don't get your allowance. Go take a shower. But now we were rewarding kids for getting messy. And I think they love that idea. And when we did Family Double Dare, when the moms and dads got slobbered by the kids
they
with all this stuff, the kids loved it. You know,
and the license to make your parent messy is like, that's nirvana.
We gave them permission.
Yeah.
And it worked out. It was just perfect thought out stuff.
And there was like chocolate. You guys had a ton of like, there was whipped cream, a lot of stuff you could eat. And I wonder, take us behind the scenes. Was it slippery in there? I looked at the floor and I'm like, you know, I used to practice law, and I'm looking at this like slip and fall, waiting to happen.
We got stories there, don't we?
And it's a kind of a vinyl surface so that the squeegees could clean it off. But in the first couple of seasons, I think they didn't have the stage built this way, but they later built in at the front of the stage these troughs with little grates on them, sort of like a storm drain kind of thing. And so you'd get these big squeegees in, you know, in the breaks between, and you'd pull all this goo and it'd slop it into the trough and the lights and the heat. And, you know, by lunchtime, midday, it was quite a science project going on.
I wonder what it smelled like in there. Did it smell like vanilla?
I wish it did. It smelled like vanilla poop. It was some days it would get bad. One day we filled the tank with 5,000 pounds of baked beans, and after day three, that was quite an
experience. Oh, my, because it got stuck in the tank.
It got there. But when we built the studio down in Orlando, they built in drains in the floor. So when we'd go to commercial, they would
just hose it down?
And put it in the drain and be done, as opposed to here where we couldn't do that.
The stage crew should be lauded to the heavens, because they had to clean up all that stuff and they had to get ready, and they did it mostly in real time to get ready for the next round. And we would shoot the questions up front. We do a couple of games of questions the first two rounds, and then we would do obstacle courses, because you couldn't do like a game in real time, round 1-2 obstacle course, then round 1-2 obstacle course, because now you got the obstacle course spreads, you know, gush everywhere. Mm-hmm. So we would do a bunch of obstacle courses in a row, but we'd have to get them cleaned up and ready to run the second or third obstacle course of the morning, and then two in the afternoon.
Because the shows were like back to back. You'd stack the shows.
We started to do 4 a day, and then we went to 5, and then we got up to 6 a day.
Oh my goodness.
Well, here's the good news, guys. The smell has since dissipated.
Thank goodness.
So you don't have the guilty conscience.
Walked into the building,
that.
And luckily I didn't.
I can't even imagine. Yeah. Oh my goodness.
It was pretty bad.
Let's bring in another caller, and this cross our fingers here. This is Anne from Villas on the line. I think Anne has a personal memory about the show. Hey, Anne, you're on Studio 2. Take us down memory lane.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. My daughter and her friends in 1988 or 1989 were on the show. And they had to go through an extensive tryout in their school.
Yep.
So they were chosen amongst a lot of other kids. And they won.
Oh, wow.
They went through the whole super sloppy double dare, and I remember the news and all that business. And they got all these great prizes.
And was it a good memory for them?
Oh, God, yes. We have it on tape.
Nice.
And the boy, Jason Moss, he lost his tape one time, and I had another one made up for him because he was showing it to all his friends, like when he was in college. My daughter's a little embarrassed by it.
Oh, no.
How old is your daughter now?
Yeah, how old's your daughter?
She'll be 50 in November.
Wow, that's crazy. Wow. What does she do for a living?
She works for the Foreign Service. She's a Foreign Service officer,
and she's been all
over the world.
Nice, congratulations!
I'm gonna bring the tape because now she has a 6-year-old daughter, so I want to show it to her.
Oh, that's cool. The kid's gotta see it. That's perfect age, six years old. Thank you so much.
And this is like a full circle moment.
Yeah,
you know,
I love
for
it.
Them. Yeah,
let
that's
me
great.
Ask you on that point. Yep. So. The sort of why was it here? Why was it in Philadelphia? I'm sure cost had something to do with it.
Nickelodeon didn't have a lot of money. HYY at the time wanted to get in the production business, so it was a marriage made in heaven. We spent, per episode in 1986, $9,000.
Wow. Oh, my God. But let me also add this, because at least you said to the press at the time, mm-hmm. one thing you liked about taping in Philadelphia was that Philly kids just had a way about them.
They were, mm-hmm. and, you know, the accent.
Yes, exactly.
I would say to the kids, what do you like doing? And they, this is it. I go down shore. I said, excuse me? I go down shore. I didn't know they were saying down the shore. But, mm-hmm. you know, but and the accent here, it's like Foon, Dunitz, Hoogies. You know, it's just a unique thing. But they are real. And that's what I loved about them. And I think the kids at home identified because afterwards they did a show. You know, a lot of competitive shows came up. And they did a show called... What the heck was it called? But anyway, the kids were more like Disney-esque, and they looked perfect, and the etiquette was, you know, and we were real people doing what real kids do.
Because actor kids don't act like real kids.
Yeah.
They're actor kids.
And the Philly kids, the audience had was
Fun
part
House
of the
was
love.
A show.
Yeah.
That they, oh, yeah.
I have to read. This is a great quote from Mark Summers. In L.A., if you ask a kid what his hobby is, he'll say, well, I've done a Benson and a Facts of Life.
That's true.
And in Philly, it's a totally different vibe.
Yeah, totally different deal. Yeah.
I got to ask, did you, like, what did this show do for Nickelodeon?
Oh, well, put
because,
them on the map.
I mean, it sort of went from this obscure network to
they had, like,
one
no
the,
original programming, right?
And this, and then how did that affect your life? Because you guys, I mean, I'm not saying you weren't famous before.
No,
Double
I really
Dare,
wasn't. No,
you
I wasn't.
Know, but this is like a national opportunity.
For Mark, it was his first big break. For me, I'd been working a lot of years, but in Philadelphia. So here's a kid who lives in Philly, doesn't want to leave Philadelphia, but would love to do the things that you do if you're in L.A. or New York, right? But I'm not going to go there because I'm not very ambitious. I like where I am. So a game show comes to Philadelphia. So I get to be on a game show in Philadelphia. One of my, you know, I love game shows, favorite sort of television vehicle. I get to be on this national show. We do national tours. Mark mentioned we're touring live audiences, 15, 20,000 kids. I grew up as a kid who was in a rock band in seventh grade, and my dream was to be a rock star. And so if you squinted really, really tight,
you
look out in an auditorium and there were 15,000 people screaming at you. It was like, I'm really famous.
The kids kind of like come up to you guys.
Oh, yeah.
Like you got a bunch of 10-year-olds saying, hey.
There were no selfies back in the day.
Here's the way a kid from Philly knows that he's landed on a rare vehicle and rode it as hard and as fast and as far as he could. Me and Mark got to be in Mad Magazine.
Yes.
And they did a parody of our show, and he was Muck Slummers, and I was Hardly. Yeah. And I glared Hardly. Into the camera all the time, a really curmudgeonly guy. And I thought, if I just get one caricature in Mad, and I was on like every page and almost every panel, and it was like, oh my God, I got in Mad Magazine.
Yeah, that was amazing. That was rock star treatment.
It turned my life around. All of a sudden, I was doing the Today Show. I was on Hollywood Squares. I was on every game show. And so that was a changing point. And, you know, needless to say, I was absolutely thrilled about that whole situation. So it was Harvey and I were in Orlando, and we couldn't wait to go to the space launch area where the whole moon landing went. And Harvey and I were so, so excited. And we're in the room where it all happened. And then these kids discover us. They went, oh, it's Mark and Harvey. Can we have your autograph? And Harvey and I just wanted to soak up the science aspect of it. But, you know, at times you got to do what you got to do. Yeah.
Wow. Well, can we bring in a caller? We have Frank from Mount Airy on the line. Frank, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment or your memory?
I just want to say, Harvey, I loved you in the 80s on the radio. I woke up to you every day, loved listening to you. I had my breakfast and got ready before I hopped on the train. You were the best. You were fantastic. I remember when they took you off, I called the producer and he said, well, the ratings just weren't there anymore. And it was a real shame, but man, I had some great memories of you in the morning.
Well, I'd say get over it. I'm kidding. Thank you. Thank you so much for remembering. I mean, at the time, it's funny, when you do something for 22 years, you think this is your whole life. This is what you do. This is who I am. And then it goes away, and I couldn't get arrested. I could not get another radio show. I worked in television for another 11 years or so, but I just couldn't get on the radio again. And it's like now I've been off the radio for many more years than I was even on.
Right.
Totally. So the fact that somebody still remembers it is so gratifying. So thank you for taking the time to make the call.
Speaking of memories, do kids who are now adults come up to you guys now? And what are those interactions like, Mark?
They all have stories about, you know, we built an obstacle course in my mom's living room and she got upset with us and we, you know, poured our version of slime all over the place. And the fact that we're doing this 40th anniversary, we're doing it at a place called City Winery here in Philadelphia. Yep. We sold out in a nanosecond.
Wow.
And so for those people who can't get in now and would like to come, it's going to pay-per-view starting Halloween night. If you go to MarkSummersLive.com, you can order it. And if you put WHYY in there, you'll get a little discount on that.
Nice.
So starting Halloween night through the end of the year, you can watch that on pay-per-view and understand what it is we're doing at this fabulous 40th anniversary show.
I love it. I want to read a couple comments. Luann from Glenside says she also wanted to shout out Jean London. She says she was on the show in the early 60s. She was almost, she was 6 or 7 years old. We also have Ruth from Chester who said she really liked Gene London, who had a great Philly show when I babysat my charges. Loved to watch it with me. I wished I could draw as well as he could. So a lot of folks talking about other great shows.
Nice.
And so, you know, when you think about, you know, sort of how Double Dare sort of changed the whole kids programming landscape. I mean, what do you think is your fondest memory of being a part of that change, being a part of that shift, and empowering kids?
When people come up to me 40 years later and say, my afternoon started when you guys came on the air and we laughed and we loved to participate via the TV screen. And here they are as 50-year-olds still thinking about it and have great memories. And so I think, what would you say, Harvey?
Yeah, I mean, when you're, you know, about to buy a car from someone who's wearing a suit and then he sees your name and he goes, wait, are you Harvey from Double Dare? And so this grown-up man person is all of a sudden telling me about childhood memories. And there's just such a an open sharing because you're tapping into a really special place. If somebody remembers a show and is a fan of a show, that show gets into you. It's like they've invested some of themselves into what you have done. Mm. And the fact that you see the impact of it, that's always been the most rewarding thing of doing anything I ever did, putting myself on display and trying to entertain folks, was when you saw that it had an impact. It bounced around in them. Something spoke to them. You touched the nerve. They remembered it. They remembered you. It's like, that's really why you do it. And, of course, for the tremendous amount of money that you man.
Well, we had no idea when we were doing it. We just knew we were having fun. And the impact that that show had, you could have never in your mind thought that it was going to be as big as it became.
Yeah. Yeah. But, by the way, was there a kid show that did that for you guys in your life? Like a show that you remember just...
There was a show called Wonderama that was around, and it was more of a talk show for kids. But even back then, they didn't have talk shows for kids. But no, nothing. There was a show called Video Village, and it was a kids' game show.
Video Village.
Yes, and they had, if you were playing Parcheesi and you moved a part, well, the kids became the parts, and they moved them on various parts of the board. Well, and that was fun.
I grew up in Philly, so I knew all the Philly. Yep. And there were a lot of them. They were mostly produced here. Captain Kangaroo was national, of course. But there was Bertie the Bunyip with Lee Dexter. One time on a radio show, I had a back-to-school week, and I invited all these people. I had Lee Dexter, who was Australian, and had Bertie the Bunyip, these puppets. I had Sally Starr.
Yep.
I had... who else did I have back? Oh, I had Chief Halfdown came on.
Mm. He was on for 50 years.
Yeah. So I watched these. Wee Willie Weber, he had a kids show. As a kid, you'd watch and they'd do something that was magical. Yeah. It would entertain
you. And it's core memory. It really is core memory. Yeah, that stuff sticks with you forever.
It's baked in.
Well, we have to end the conversation there, but let me thank both of you so much for your time today. Mark Summerst, TV personality, host of the original Double Dare, produced right here at WHYY. Thank you, Mark.
You guys are great.
Thank you so much.
We had a ball.
Good. Do we have game show potential? Mark, we'll talk about it off air.
For sure.
John Harvey, TV radio personality, announcer on Double Dare. Harvey, thanks for the time today.
Oh, thank you, guys.
Yeah, and thank you to everybody who called in, wrote in, and shared their memories. And, of course, we couldn't do any of what we do without our producers, Debbie Bilder, Hazel May Bryan, and Ben Abrams. Mike Schiffler is our visual producer. Charlie Kyer and Paul Parmalee engineered the show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCory. And this music, I've been jamming to it, doing this all morning for
Avi. I'm ready to jump in the baked beans right now.
From Studio 2 here at WHYY Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg and a fan of Double Dare.
I'm Avi Wolfman, Eric. We'll talk to you tomorrow. And tomorrow on the show at noon, solutions to the housing crisis. More than half of all renters spend 30% of their paycheck or more to keep a roof over their head. Millions of Americans are locked out of home ownership with soaring prices and a shortage of houses.
So we will talk about possible fixes, flexible zoning, more vouchers, and the YIMBY movement, and a whole lot more. All of that is coming up tomorrow. But coming up next on WHYY, we have Here and Now. We'll see you on the radio tomorrow.